Rococho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. We will, we're striving now to get a little bit more detail on this story that the Washington Post has broken about the what they are reporting that the president shared classified intelligence information with the Russian diplomats who were in the Oval Office last week. Yeah, the foreign minister and the ambassador to the United States.
And it was intelligence dealing with ISIS in particular is what we're learning.
That apparently was provided to the administration, or at least to the United States, by a partner, by an intelligence partner, who, and this was intelligence not even shared with our own allies, about very specific operations concerning ISIS, including possibly the place of certain ISIS assets that might soon be targeted. And now that has somehow leaked out. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, who leaked it and why are they leaking it?
And that's great questions.
First of all, why would he do it? That's A, number one. B, number two, is who leaked it out? Was it somebody in his own White House? Was it the Russians who leaked it out? And at what point is the president going to stop and go, you know what? Maybe they're not too good after all. I could be wrong. He would never say those words, but worry too. So and this is a breaking story that is starting to get some traction.
Just this afternoon.
Within the last 45 minutes, this has come out. So we'll get you some detail on that as much as we can. In the meantime, over the weekend, too, there was a missile launch, a successful missile launch now by the North Koreans. You got to Kim Jong-un saying that the United States, threatening now that the United States mainland is within reach of their technical capabilities and their nuclear capabilities, he is also warning. This is a missile that actually left North Korea and then landed not too far away from major naval assets of the Russian Navy. Now, that's that, and then that provoked the Kremlin to say, hey, don't screw with us, to North Korea, but also for Russia to kind of blame the United States in part for escalating the tensions here on the Korean Peninsula, and potentially that could be our fault, too. I'm not sure I understand this. All right, the president of Plowshares Fund, an author of a new book called The Nuclear Nightmares, Scaring the World Before It Is Too Late. Joe Serantioni is joining us right now on the hotline. So, Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
My pleasure.
And let's talk a little bit about what it was that they launched. This is being called a very successful launch, but I believe I saw you about a couple of hours ago on CNN saying that this does not necessarily threaten the United States homeland. Is that right?
That's right. This missile itself can't yet reach the United States. But it is by far the most successful and most sophisticated missile that North Korea has tested.
Where could it reach in terms of if this was successful?
So this is such an interesting launch. This missile only traveled about 500 miles, which is about the distance from Portland, Maine to Washington, D.C. But that's because it went on a lofted trajectory, straight up in the air and then straight down. And it went extremely high. When you fly in a plane, you're flying at about 6 or 7 miles above the ground. This thing flew 1,300 miles straight up, and then it came back down. If you flatten that out to a normal missile trajectory, it could fly about 2,500 miles, or the width of the United States, in about 30 minutes. That means that North Korea can hit targets, 2,500 miles from its shore. That's not the continental United States, but it could hit Guam, which is a major U.S. military base, and where we station some of our bombers that are targeted on North Korea. The danger from this isn't so much the missile itself. It's what it represents, an advanced technology, another stage in their effort to build a longer-range missile. And the reason they lofted it, the reason they shot it up and had to come back down, is that simulated the trajectory of or the speed and the vibration of an incoming ICBM, a long-range missile that comes in very fast and very hot, and they were testing out a reentry vehicle. Can their reentry vehicle withstand that pressure, that heat? We don't know what the results are from their tests, but they are clearly making major efforts. Most of us think that if they just continue on this program, within 4 or 5 years, they could have a missile that would hit the United States with a thermonuclear warhead.
All right, let's talk about the distance. 1,300 miles straight up. I mean, that's well into where an ICBM would have to travel, right?
Oh, much further, much further. So, you know, space starts, depending on how you count it, at about 60 or 100 miles up. So this is, you know, way into outer space. So, yes, this is, we call this an intermediate range. It's in between the short and medium range missiles that they have that could target, that now target South Korea and Japan.
And the only reason to send it up, and again, and this is very chilling, and I just want to make sure that people understand it. The only reason to send it that far into space, because an ICBM wouldn't even travel to 1,300 miles outside,
right,
off the Earth before it reentered, is to test the stresses of a potential reentry vehicle, which would be nuclear tipped.
Exactly that. And you know, they also said, look, they didn't want to fly it over Japan. Okay, that's nice. So you realize once you start testing, they seem to be threading the needle here. They're advancing their program. They're testing very advanced technologies, but they're trying to stay just short of where it would trigger even greater international concern. So not flying it over Japan, not testing a missile yet out to real ICBM ranges, real intercontinental ballistic missile ranges.
They're getting close. Let me ask you this, because, Joe, this is the part that, and I know that you cover this in your book, but this is the part that I really fully don't understand. Obviously, they're getting some very, very deft technical assistance from someone.
Yeah.
And they're the hermit nation, right? So they don't send their scientists out of the country primarily. And they don't accept, you know, there isn't a whole lot of communication with people outside the country. So where are they getting this technical assistance?
Well, they do go outside of the country. They just don't come to us. So they have trade relations with China, with Pakistan, with Iran, with Russia. Now, some of that is state to state, but some of it is just private contractors. So we know that they have hired former Soviet rocket engineers and physicists to come help them. We know they purchased technology from China, some of it applicable to the missile program. There's a terrific article in the Wall Street Journal today talking about how they've automated using robots. Like we use robots to make cars, they're using these robots now to get precision parts for their missiles, and that is Chinese technology sold to them for civilian purposes, but then quickly applied to these military purposes. And there are some fears that China's been knowingly supplying them with some missile technologies. This missile that they just launched looks a lot like a former Chinese missile.
Politically, what do you think Kim Jong-un is trying to achieve here? Is he showing his force to the world, letting everyone know that he's serious? I saw Nikki Haley this weekend, the UN ambassador, talking about how this is not a way to get a sit-down with our president. This is not a way to forward any type of relationships with anybody, China included. And so what do you think is at work here?
I know. He's complicating some of his own diplomacy. I mean, South Korea just elected a president, Moon Jae-in, who says he wants to sit down with the North Koreans. Very different from the hardline conservative president that was just impeached. Well, here now Kim Jong-un tests a missile right in his face a week after this guy gets office, making it more difficult for the South Koreans to make any kind of entree in negotiations. So what is he after? It's pretty clear, and he says it all the time. They want an ICBM that can hit the United States. They believe that will guarantee their security. They believe that they need to threaten the United States directly with a nuclear weapon, and then the U.S. will be deterred from attacking them. So it isn't that he'll build this weapon and then just launch it out of the blue. He sees this as the guarantee of his security, the security of his regime, and in his mind, his regime and the country are one and the same.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. And the other thing that happened here this weekend, too, that's worth noting is that they did this as the Chinese are doing their One Road, One Belt summit with many of their regional partners, including Vladimir Putin being there, and sort of a stick in the eye to Xi Jinping, to the Chinese president. So it's a very complicated road that we're on here. But you know what? You know, every day is another crazy thing, and I don't know what to do with it. Joe, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Joe,
it.
That helped.
My pleasure.
Give us perspective.
Call me anytime. I can calm you down.
I don't know about that. That's a big promise.
Many have tried, Joe.
This call, not so much, but let's try the next time.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Maybe it'll be better next time.
Joe Cerencioni, author of Nuclear Nightmares, Securing the World Before It Is Too Late. Violetta Padromenic, author of The 5 O'Clock Traffic.